Welcome to Behind the Curtain, everybody. That, of course, is music. I know you know the music. It's from the classic show called Gypsy. It is playing now. But, you know, typically, I might not open an interview and segment like that, like this, with that particular number. But I'm sure if you've ever heard that song before, you heard in this version the emotion and the power. And that's why I wanted to open with it, because the very powerful performance by the actress doing that role is with us. And I want you to get to know her. She's been on the show before, but this time it's all about Gypsy. Joining us to talk about Gypsy at the Porchlight Music Theater is E. Faye Butler, who plays Mama Rose. Faye, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Good to have you back. Darren Whitney Harrell, who plays your daughter Louise, and of course, who in the real world goes on to be Gypsy Rose Lee. Darren, welcome to you to the show.
Hello, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and the director, who every time I talk to him, I always say he's outdone himself with the current show. And the thing is, I always mean it, too, and I think I'm going to say it again, is Michael Weber. He's also the artistic director of Porchlight. Michael, welcome back. We talk to you often.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me back.
So I got to tell you, I mean, and I'm serious when I say this, and in the review that I wrote for the show, I made the comment, and Ife, you'll appreciate this, which is your performance is one of those rare theatrical moments when actor meets character. And I really believe if people didn't know that Sondheim et al. Had written this in 1959, they would have thought this thing was written for you. So let me ask you, you've never played this role before, but it has to be a role you've wanted to play.
Yeah, it was absolutely on my bucket list. I always tell this brief story that it happened because since for the last 15 to 10 years, every time an artistic director would say to me, what do you want to do? What is that dream role you have? And I'd go, Rose, Mama Rose. And they'd go, oh, that's nice. And they would just, what else would you like to do? And they all would say that to me. And I said, what is it about me constantly saying that? No one's listening to me. Because I studied it. I love it. I think it's a great story. So it's a role I've always wanted to play. And Porchlight and Michael Weber took me up on it. I did a little parody about it in a show last year this time. And Michael came to me and he said, you really want to do this, don't you? I said, I've been saying that for 15 years.
You know, you can't ever accuse Michael Weber of not taking a hint, because I do the same thing with him with Fiddler. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit as well. He knows a hint when it hits him. But Darren, I want to come to you for a moment because, you know, if people didn't know Gypsy, but they know a little bit of history, this actually comes from a book, from a story written by Gypsy Rose Lee. She's the one that becomes famous in the world as a kind of an entertaining stripper. And by the way, I just bought myself an autograph from Gypsy Rose Lee all because of this performance. I got so into it, I went and kind of found a book she wrote. And it's autographed and signed it because you really got me into this. But Darren, talk to me about playing somebody else who is also kind of a legendary icon in life, a role that so many people watched, certainly I did growing up, Gypsy Rose Lee.
It's kind of, I still kind of can't believe it a little bit, just that this role is able for me to play it. I remember like when I auditioned and I got a call back for Louise, I think I was still shocked. At the time I was just coming into town, so I didn't even know they were casting it this with this kind of demographic and everything. So it was just kind of like mind-blowing to be considered for Louise. And I'm still in a little bit of a shock state that I'm like, I get to play this iconic character that everyone knows.
Well, the good news is you get to continue playing it. You get to keep playing it through December 29th because it's been extended by popular demand. No, it was no surprise to me. Michael, you know, Darren just sort of talked about the particular casting of the show. You know, I think ever since Hamilton came on the scene, not that that was the first or the last, but, you know, this notion of not tying a color to character, this notion of color-intensive casting. I used to call it colorblind, and Lin-Manuel Miranda said to me, it's really color-intensive. This is a certainly predominantly African-American cast. The key players in the real world of this story were white, but that doesn't matter anymore, does it?
It doesn't matter in the sense of if that is your intention to what you're open to. It does matter in terms of going through it with a very fine-tooth comb to make sure that you're being mindful and sensitive to what an actor is going to be encountering when they're playing a particular kind of role. In this case, it really did begin with Ife, with the idea of Ife playing Rose. And from there, it all bets were off in terms of how it might eventually be cast. Faye was very present in terms of all of the auditions, was very mindful in terms of giving us her feedback, but was not at all insistent in terms of anybody who would be playing opposite her. And at the same time, we kept the doors wide open to actors of of a wide breadth of racial diversity as well as gender diversity in terms of all of the roles that we looked at. And the audition process really just evolved in terms of these actors who are cast in the show now saying, this is my role. And it wasn't us in pursuit of any particular results. It was the actors walking in the door and saying, I'm the one who's supposed to be playing Ife's daughter or Ife's other daughter or Ife's lover in this show or Ife's father in this show. And that's how it really evolved. So it was the type of thing of just being open within the audition environment and the results just sort of telling us what it was supposed to be.
And it made for perfection, as far as I'm concerned, in casting. All of your casts are so, my God, the sound, the music, so powerful, so it fills the theater, and this is no different. It's just so tremendous. And Ife, let me come back to you. For some people that don't know Gypsy, we really should tell them what the story is about. Kind of in my question so far, there's been an inherent everybody knows, but they don't. So let me ask you to tell the story, but here's the thing. Talk about the role of Mama Rose in this story. You do play this, I've seen many women play this role. There's a brashness, there's a strength to your role and what Mama wants that I often don't see in other actresses who played this role.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we have to remember that it's a fable, and it is the memory and the memoirs of Gypsy Rose Lee. So some of it is factual. Some people say some of it isn't. That's what makes it a fable. And I think this is her perspective on how she remembers her mother, her life, her career. This is her take. Her sister doesn't necessarily agree. Her mother didn't necessarily agree. But this was her take on it. And I think in doing that, I think Rose is such a very dynamic character. She has so many colors, so many levels. She wants so much for her children. Her mother left her. She's not going to leave her girls. She's going to do everything to make their lives great and wonderful. She wanted to be an actress. Could she have been an actress? Could she have been a performer and entertainer? She's going to make sure her girls do by any means necessary. She's been married 3 times, so she doesn't have a lot of trouble with men. It's keeping them. And it's because she has that thirst and that need for her children to have the best, you know? And she's fighting for their lives when in turn she's really fighting for her own life. There's so many levels of it. I think she's sexy. I think she's loving. She's caring. But she's devoted and she's conniving, manipulative. She got a lot of stuff going on with her.
And Darren, of course, you weren't, that is, Louise, was not supposed to be the star of this show in terms of the star of the story within that story. It was supposed to be your sister, June, baby June, who grows into June. So tell the listeners a little bit about that, you know, because there is a transition that happens from, you know, June, who was the light of her mother's eye, and then all of a sudden, well, certain things take her away, don't they? And then all of a sudden, Louise takes the limelight.
Yeah, June realizes that she's growing up throughout this whole time period, even though they are still playing and that are 9 and 10 years old, and they're around the age of 15 at this time. And she wants to grow up and be an adult. So she ends up leaving, and Louise is just kind of left with her mom and Herbie, the man that she is seeing. And so then Louise is kind of put in the front line of, okay, now I'm going to make you a star. And she just has to, in a way, she wants her mom's approval, and so she does what she can so she can get that attention and be noticed by her mom.
Michael, Gypsy's often been described as the most perfect musical ever written. I know you know that. Why? What makes this the most perfect musical ever written?
Well, part of it has to do with the music itself. I mean, the inherent thing about a musical is what is the quality of the songs. Gypsy is one of those songs that is just jam-packed with what we call evergreens. They are songs that were able to be taken out and sung by Ella Fitzgerald and Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra and all of these other people. So they got into the public conscience. The thing about the songs, though, is that they are intrinsically connected to the plot of the play. They advance the plot. They enlighten the plot. They are sometimes appearing to be frivolous in terms of some of the vaudeville numbers, but in fact, they are informing the audience about what kind of act was this, what was the quality of their vaudeville act. So when it was written, it was an interesting fusion of the old world of music theater writers with people like Julie Stein, who have since the 1940s been writing all of these big hit songs for Hollywood movies. And then along comes this young man named Stephen Sondheim, who was very resentful of the fact that Julie Stein would take the songs out of context of Gypsy, and he'd have Bing Crosby singing them on his TV show. And Sondheim would go, "What are you doing? This song is connected to the show." And Julie Stein would go, "Kid, you got to make your money where you can, and you've got to get these songs out there." So the thing about it is that the show is equal parts complete theatrical integrity in terms of the three-dimensional nature that the characters are written. And at the same time, it has songs that have become popular classics, that when you hear them in context of the show, you suddenly are sort of mind-blown to go, oh, a song like Everything's Coming Up Roses is not inherently a song all about positivity and what it says in the lyric. The situation in which Rose sings Everything is Coming Up Roses is one of the darkest, most despairing moments in her life. So you understand how the dramatic tension suddenly explodes as a piece of theater. And that's why it ends up being called, at least even as it did in 1959, it was called the best damn musical I've ever seen, said one of the big critics in New York. And it still really holds up to today.
Yeah, it really does. Ife, if I had just given a list of the awards you've won for your performance, we would have no time to talk about the show itself. I'll just briefly mention 6 Joseph Jefferson Awards, a couple of Helen Hayes Awards, all the old John Barrymore Award, Ovation Awards. See, it goes on and on, not to mention you were inducted into the Woman in the Arts Museum in Washington, D.C. And so having said all of that, yet, although you are very present on stage, and by the way, the word must be out about your performance, because when you walked on stage the night I came in to see you, the audience began this thunderous applause. You hadn't said a word yet. So that tells me people have heard that they already know they're in for a blockbuster performance when you get that at the opening. And yet, this show doesn't work without the magical work of that ensemble that surrounds you.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for saying that. This has been one of those pieces that I've said to the cast time and time again, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart with all love. I am only as good as they are. I cannot do that show without every single person. There's not a gratuitous part. I'll tell you why this is the most perfect musical, in my opinion. It has an amazing book, a book that you can hold on to, and it's a good play that has music that invokes so many passions and takes you in so many directions. For me, that's what I love about this piece, the book. Second, there's not a character that steps on that stage that Arthur Lawrence did not give a name to. They're not just people walking around. Everybody from the guy that just carries a light across the stage, that's Gus, Mr. Zipster, who plays the drums, everybody, the dog.
I love that dog. I met Cheddar after the show. Cheddar's adorable.
And there's a reason, and that's what makes it so great. You're looking at a world of individuals, human beings that we can see ourselves in. And that's what makes it so beautiful and perfect to me and for me.
By the way, they say
the ensemble makes that come alive.
They say you shouldn't play with kids and dogs. It's the worst thing for an actress. You got both of them.
Yes, child. I'm taking my penance now so that maybe the next time I work, I don't have to.
I love it. Thank goodness it's only recorded forever in this podcast.com. Darren, let me ask you, and you, by the way, you've got opera in your background with Queenie Pie and Aida, and you also, you were in Book of Mormon, right, on the tour? So you come to a role like this, and talk to me as well about the nature of playing a role like this, which is so iconic sort of in history, as opposed to some of the other roles you play, which are just kind of, you know, the shows themselves are big as this is. But here we have a character that, again, depending on the age of the audience, they know who it is.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like my past previous roles, I mean, specifically we can go with Book of Mormon. We've got a huge comedy show, and that show lives on like laughs and everything, and it's just funny. And then you have Gypsy, which has just drama, and it has beautiful it's a comedy still, and it has its beautiful moments, but it also does have those gut-wrenching moments in the show. So it's one of those shows for sure that I can say on my resume, this has made me work and dig into this character and challenge me as an actress, because she is not an easy girl. She had a life, which is why she has this musical. And I love that it's told through her eyes, and just all of the people, like Ife was saying, all of these characters, they have names because they all were present in her life and her story. So yeah, in terms of my past work and as well as this, it's all been just a great journey that I'm just so blessed and thankful to have the opportunity to have these characters in my life.
And Michael, because I don't believe you leave anything to chance, one of the things, of course, I noticed, and maybe I gave it more thought than I should, but throughout the entire show, there are various cast members who sit on the side, sort of in the wings, and they're watching the action. Now, admittedly, they move the scenery around, too, and they change things, but you don't have to have them where they are to do that. So I kept trying to pay attention to who's watching in various scenes, and can you talk to me? Was there a purposefulness to the decision of who you wanted, kind of on stage, because we see them watching the scenes as they play out?
Well, it's quite mapped out, and this is the thing about the show. As you mentioned earlier, is that it is based on a book that was originally written by Gypsy Rose Lee. The irony of the book is that the most famous character that came out of the book was her mother. For an autobiography, it's interesting that so much of the focus was on a different person in her life and not herself. We tried to really use that book and the fact that this whole show really is here because of Louise's vision of her life, as Ife mentioned, and the fanciful nature of it, and that she remembered each of the people at different phases of her life as essential characters in her story. So if you were able to go back to 1959 and see the show originally as produced on Broadway, you'd be seeing a show that in Act One alone has 12 completely different locations for each scene. And back in 59, every one of those scenes were completely fully realized on the Broadway stage. We're not able to do that, nor were we interested to try to do that at the Ruth Page Center. We wanted to go back to the idea that this was part of Louise's memories, that the moment that ends the play, when she and her mother have this sort of confrontation and reconciliation, at that point in their lives, everything would be different and changed. The story she's telling is everything that leads up to that moment. And all of the characters that you're seeing on the sides are the characters that make up Louise's life. They're the characters she remembered. So each of the people who pass across the stage and introduce the next scene, or are waiting to bound onto the stage and act in the next scene, are the characters of her life, waiting for the page to turn, for their moment to tell their part of the story. And that's, again, when you say, mentions that each of the characters has a name and a personality. Yeah. You remember, we know now who Mr. Goldstone is. We know what Uncle Jocko is. But if you go back and you look at this play, those characters are only in one scene. Mr. Goldstone says no lines. And yet many people who know theater absolutely know what you mean when you say, have an egg roll, Mr. Goldstone. So it reinforces how powerful those characters are. And for us, we wanted to spend a little bit more time with them. So you see them literally waiting off stage to get into the story and act their month.
And in fact, I did want to make a notice, and Faye and I were talking after the show about that, the fact that everybody does have, you're not Ensemble One, Man in the Corner. You know, those are not the names of these characters. They did exist. They were people. And so what a great point. Whether they headlined or not, they are human beings. And these actors truly portray them. I got to do a special shout out for people like Dawn Bless and Honey West. And some of just the mm-hmm. great cat people that even if they're in one scene or a couple of scenes, they just they're just so present on stage. It's amazing. And by the way, Michael, while I have you talking, I would be foolish not to have you kind of mention a special event coming up on November 19th and 20th. Can you just tell us briefly what that might be and why I care?
Well, there's a project that we've been doing for a few years now. Actually, Faye has been one of our hosts, as you will be, of a thing called New Faces Sing Broadway. And it's become a really wonderful, popular thing that we've created here at Porchlight. And it's sort of inspired by a series that was on Broadway back from the late early 1930s to the mid-60s. And it was called New Faces. And it gave an opportunity for some of the fresh new talent. Back then, they had names like young Henry Fonda and young Eartha Kitt and this guy named Paul Lynde or Madeline Kahn, who nobody had ever heard of. And this is how they burst on the scene. We wanted to create a similar show. And so we pick one season on Broadway, and we do music from every single show that happened on Broadway. We take the audience through a little time machine, like let's go back, and I remember exactly what year that Faye did, but you are going to be the host, Paul Lisnick, of New Faces Sing Broadway 1964, which was one of the great years on Broadway, in which you had playing all at the same time. If you bought a ticket, you could go see the original Hello, Dolly, the original Funny Girl, the original Fiddler on the Roof, and then things like Fade Out, Fade In, which was a huge hit show that Carol Burnett was starring in, and nobody remembers it these days. Ben Franklin in Paris with Robert Preston playing Ben Franklin. These just wonderful shows that you get to see, the hit shows, the not-so-hit shows. And this all, you are participating, Paul, because you had expressed your particular love for the show Fiddler on the Roof and your interest in someday, you know, digging your teeth into some of Tevye's songs. So why don't you host the show for us, and you get to sing a little If I Were a Rich Man and Tradition, and then you're going to be surrounded by 10 of the hot, new, young, talented kids that are in Chicago singing all the rest of that big Broadway season.
And I can't wait. And I'll be singing every other song you forget to turn my mic off during, by the way. So
yes, just you will.
So, yes, when I get my hands and Don't Rain on My Parade, I don't know, they might say, shut him up. No, anyway, so well, you can get tickets for all of these, for New Faces Sing Broadway 1964, but of course for Gypsy, which plays through December 29th. Go to porchlightmusictheater.org. I've always been impressed by the fact that you spell theater the correct way, the British way, T-R-E at the end. porchlightmusictheater.org. You are in a relatively new space for you guys, the Ruth Page Center for the Arts at 1016 North Dearborn. Although I should mention, if you come to New Faces of 1964, that's actually not there. That's up at the Skokie Theater on November 19th to reach that world, and November 20th down at the Arts Club of Chicago. So a couple of new and fun venues to try things out in.
Mm-hmm.
Faye, I have to ask you before I let you go, did you have a stage mother? I'm going to ask both of you guys that. Did you have a stage mother?
Yes, absolutely. And her name was Elizabeth Faye Butler. So, yes, I'm named after my mother, and she was major in the arts. Trust me. Yes, yes, and yes.
And Darren, how about you? Stage mama?
I did not have a stage mom, but I have two amazing supportive parents.
Which is always as good. Well, I want to thank you. You guys are so wonderful. Again, one of the best shows I've ever seen. Michael, you continue. I'm waiting to just have you on for a show and go, that wasn't one as good as last one. But it just never happens. Because every show just outshines the one before. And this one, as I just said in my review, I mean, it's one of those special moments. And I sort of said, it was sort of like, with all due respect, but Bette Midler in Hello, Dolly, or maybe Zero Mostel in Fiddler on the Roof, or Carol Channing. You know, there's just these moments. And for me, Ife Butler as Mama Rose is one of those moments that everybody
thank
in Chicago
so much,
cannot
thank
miss.
You, thank you. Thank you.
Ife Butler, Darren Whitney Hall, and Michael Weber, thank you all. We're going to go out playing a little bit more of the music from Gypsy, which you should not miss, at porchlightmusictheater.org through December 29th. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
just love that music. And if you don't know it, you should, because it is an opening number from Pippin, which, of course, played on Broadway for so long, and it's come through the city many times. But it is now playing at the, I want to say Mercury Theater. It is, but it's in the Venus Cabaret Theater at what you are familiar with as the Mercury Theater Chicago over at 3745 North Southport Avenue. What great space where Avenue Q is also playing. We're going to talk to that cast coming up in a future podcast. But having seen Pippin and having the experience of seeing it in this space, I thought was absolutely amazing. And so I wanted to introduce you all to some of the key players in it. And so joining me now is Dontario Johnson. He plays the character known as Leading Player. Ben Vereen played it on Broadway, just to give you a perspective on it. But I think he's outshined here by Dontario. Dontario, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
We last worked together on Spamilton. You were amazing in that. And so I'm glad you're here doing this show now. And playing Pippin. Can't talk about Pippin without Pippin. And so we get Korai Tarhan joining us. Korai, welcome. Good to talk to you. It's the first time I've seen you perform in Chicago.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
And, of course, our old friend on the podcast, Walter Stearns, is directing Pippin, also, of course, the artistic director, the king of Mercury Theater Chicago, and responsible for all of the great performances and programs that go on. I'm actually going to start with you, Walter, because the whole vision and creativity of saying, I want to work with what could have just been a lounge space. That's what I thought it was going to be. Let's have a drink. Let's just kind of sit in the Venus Lounge for a while. You said, no. This is cabaret space. This is theater space. I'm thinking maybe you were influenced a little bit by Theo Ubiquet and Fred Anzavino and what he's done over there. I don't know, but talk to me about the transition.
It's kind of an amazing space. And, hey, thank you for having us on. We're really delighted to share our story with you and your audience. It's an amazing little magical space, and I've always been drawn to these sort of jewel box theater experiences. I always thought that the real experience is in that sort of intimate storytelling where the actor and the audience are sharing the same space together, and it is it's kind of a little bit more honest. It's more impactful. I think that it probably ought to be the more to have the show right there in front of you, as opposed to some of these giant theaters where you're in the fourth balcony and you really can't get up close and intimate with the story. So our Venus Cabaret is this magical little space next door to the Mercury Theater. We only seat about 66 people, and the room itself sort of dictates how you tell a story in this room. It has to be a little bit more close, a little bit more honest, and it's a real experience.
By the way, I assume this will now be a theater space, right? So after Pippin, some other appropriate show will go in that space where you get to be so intimate with the audience.
It is. And, there's a lot of technology in the room. There's a lot of sound and lighting and video that really enhances it. We're hoping that we're going to appeal to senses. We've got this beautiful show with some beautiful design and great storytelling and great music. But we're also going to have a little food, a little drink, and a little fun, and it all sort of accompanies it. It makes it more of an event, more of a special event.
Yeah, maybe I'm giving a little something away, but you get there, the cast actually sort of serves that we all got in this particular show, an empanada. A drink makes its way onto our tables. In fact, Korai, you gave me my drink on Sunday during that scene. But let me come to Dontario. Dontario, you had some great roles. I mean, in Spamilton, of course, which was so much fun to do. You and I did a TV special about that, which got nominated for some awards, but we can talk about that some other time. And also you toured with Waitress. And so you come home to Chicago now with playing Leading Player. I'm just curious whether this is one of those roles. I mentioned Ben Vereen played it on Broadway because I think he was sort of iconic when he did it as well. But as you did this, is this one of those roles that you say, I have magic to do and I want to do this show?
Yes, definitely. This has been a role that's been on my radar for about 20 years now. So it's kind of huge gift to come home and be able to tackle it and take it on. It's definitely something that I had to do. I couldn't pass it up.
And Korai, tell me a little bit of your past, because you come from L.A., right? If I have that right?
Yeah, I do. I do come from L.A., although I'm a Columbia College graduate of 2013, so I kind of made my way
to Chicago and then and did some regional theater and only decided to come back to Chicago once I had some credits on my resume.
And, Corey, I'll stick with you, but I'll get D'Onterio's feeling on this, too. You know, this is, listen, this is a sparse set, very other than some trunks, and I mean like these, you know, wooden trunks, like a suitcase kind of trunks, on stage. It's a bare stage. That means there is pressure on the actors to make this magic happen. And Corey, I'm just curious, how do you feel about that? You don't have a lot to play with up there. It's basically you, your cast members, the audience, telling this story. But you could just see that you're into the role, you're off doing your thing. What do you think of the intimacy of this performance?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, one thing we talked about in rehearsals and before we opened was the natural use of the space doesn't really allow for a whole lot to get by the audience. And Walter kind of aptly said that the BS meter, for lack of a better term, is turned up very high. And because we're just so close to the audience, you've got to rely on it just being truthful, you know, and using what you've got. I mean, I live on the trunk in the show. I always make jokes about it, that I come to it and off it and on top of it a lot. And I think it's just part of using what you have. And I think that the best gift we have is that honesty that we can provide.
And D'Onterio, how about you? The same question to you, because, you know, you played big stages, you played big places, and now here you are working with an audience and making eye contact with this audience. Talk to me about that different experience for you.
It's a fun experience for me. I really enjoy, you know, basically being on the laps of the audience. You know, you can't hide anything. You know, you have to be completely honest with it. But it's even more of a exciting experience to be on the stage with the cast. This is the first time I've been with a cast where I feel 100% safe. Like every night, you know, we take it to the limit. You know, we try new things. We live in those moments, and that's really exciting for the audience to see something that's not necessarily the same every night.
And Walter, Walter, you're probably the only person with, let's just say, the age that will allow you to answer this question. I don't think, although, hey, D'Onterio, Corey, you jump in if you want to. Well, I had interviewed Stephen Schwartz. I did a show with him and forgot to ask him this, so you're getting it, Walter. I have a theory. And that is, in this show, Bertha, Pippin's grandmother, played by Iris Lieberman, who's just really a knockout performance here. But there's a line in that song, which is I forgot the exact line, but by a man who calls you Granny, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know, I'll ask any of you, who played this role originally on Broadway?
Of course, it was Irene Wirth.
Irene Ryan.
Everybody's Granny.
And that was my question I always wanted to ask Stephen Schwartz. Was that line, by a man who calls you Granny, do you think that was homage to the Beverly Hillbillies?
You know, I bet it was. You know, the show has a really sordid history. Of course, Stephen Schwartz and Roger Hearson wrote it, and then they brought it to the great director Bob Fosse, and Bob worked his magic on it. He worked in the rehearsal room, and he kind of barred Schwartz and Hearson from the rehearsal process and restructured it and rewrote a lot of it for the talents of his actors. That was one of Bob's great strengths, was recognizing the talents of his actors and saying, what do we do with these folks? And if he had Irene Wirth in the show, I wonder who came up with the Granny line. Isn't that a fantastic homage? Beverly Hillbillies.
I'm glad you confirmed that, because I've always believed that, and that was out of respect to D'Onterio and Corey, because you were not old enough for the Beverly Hillbillies. Neither of you were, I don't think. But you can still check it out. And you know, and the other thing, D'Onterio, there's a lot of sexy in this show. These characters are I mean, really, just not only is it intimate, there's a lot of, they're just sexy characters when they portray. And of course, Corey, you've got the, you know, that innocence thing going for you. But am I right? I mean, how do you, D'Onterio? I mean, I think I'm right, right? I see this as sort of the intrigue, the sexiness, the passion of these characters. It's kind of modern, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's built in. I think you find that in any Fosse show. You know, that there's just this sexiness to the characters. Basically, we're just living in it. You know, our costume designer Richard Boylan has definitely costumed us in a way that really helps that out in a lot of ways.
And Corey, your sense, you get the, you're sort of the innocent guy here, right? The sort of the naive, innocent character who grows. You think you can solve the world and solve the problems of the world. You know, as I watched that, I don't know, it kind of struck a nerve with me of maybe some messages in today's politics. I'm not taking you to the world of today's politics, but what are you, what is your thought about the sort of naive Pippin who thinks he can just make life good for everybody?
Well, I mean, I think he is the typical kind of 20-something-year-old, right? I mean, I think there's a relatability to having the energy and the good-naturedness, but not knowing really what direction to send it in. And I think Pippin's story is about diving into multiple scenarios, kind of head first with this kind of blind pursuit of something important. And I think, I think in today's world with what we're all dealing with, there's use for that kind of energy and exuberance when it comes to taking charge and taking action.
Well, I agree. Well, Pippin, which is playing at the Venus Cabaret Theater, part of the Mercury Theater complex over there, and have some dinner at Grassroots. That's what I always do before the show. It's playing through December 16th. Walter, you never cease to amaze me with just your creativity and your staging and how you do things and what great casting, really the entire cast. I know that I'm blessed to have you guys, D'Ontario and Corey, with me here, but you are really surrounded by some amazing fellow cast members who, by the way, get to kind of play in the audience before the show starts, and we get to have some fun with them. It's just a great concept. It's a great play for Pippin. And, you know, I'm just going to ask this. Hey, Walter, what's up next after Pippin? Do you know yet?
We're always dreaming up new ideas. And this Venus Cabaret really opens up a door of endless possibilities for us. Great new stories in this room. I'm looking at the musical Once, which was a great Tony Award-winning best musical. I'm looking at some classic musicals. I'm really kind of researching right now to see what seems important at this moment in our world, what stories are important to tell at this moment, and also to figure out creative ways of telling them in this unique cabaret theater space.
Well, I think Corey and D'Ontario and myself are prepared to do Kinky Boots if you're willing to let us do it in that space.
Awesome.
I'm putting myself in that cast right there. So there's Corey going, you ain't coming to the show. Well, you don't know. We're going to I'll play your father, Corey. How about that? Anyway, I want to thank you guys. D'Ontario Johnson, leading player. So glad you are back in Chicago, my friend, because I think the world of you. And Corey Tarhan, I'm saying that name right. Got to get it in the proper way. So glad you're here to work as well. And Walter Stearns, you're just amazing. So I want to thank you. I want to encourage everybody to catch Pippin. You've got till December 16th. You can get tickets at Mercury TheaterChicago.com, right? I got that right, Walter?
All is correct. Thank you,
You
Paul.
Don't want to miss it. And you know what? We're going to go out playing a little bit of, kind of a theme song for Pippin. I thank you guys for joining me. Check out Pippin. Here we go.
Thanks to God, I found your sister.
My sister? When? Papa, where? How is she?
Came these letters from Red Cross and from the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, both together today, to Mr. Mordecai Weiss in Brooklyn. She went from concentration camp Poland to hospital Sweden. I make lots of phone calls to Greenspan's to be sure, and I'm down to immigrant office waiting with more people on same kind of business. She arrives by boat 3 weeks from now. Thanks to God, they left one from the family alive.
I can't believe it.
It's truth. From centuries, from Cossacks to Hitler, he hauled them in trail. They tried to wipe out everybody, but you, I got away in time, and now your sister.
Lucia Weiss. Pekenik. She must be married.
Married woman. Last we seen her, she was this big.
I don't remember her.
And we set...
Or my mother.
We set the drama. for a dramatic show going on now at Timeline Theater called Ashana Madel. Ashana Madel. Depending on your background, and you may understand what that means in translation. It's a play by Barbara LeBeau, and it is directed by my guest on this podcast, Vanessa Stalling, is with us, taking the time out for a show that she directed here and did such a great job. Vanessa, thank you for joining me.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And one of the stars of the show playing Lucia Weiss-Pacenik, one of the main characters, Emily Berman, fantastic actress. Actually, both of you making your Timeline Theater debut, so that's a treat to get to talk to you. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, so WGN listeners know that I'm a huge theater guy, and so when I see a show, I want to talk about it. Previously in this podcast, they've heard some musicals, but this drama steps in. And Vanessa, I'll just come to you. Tell us a little bit about what this story is, and we got a little bit in that clip, but what's it all about?
Sure. Well, really, it's it begins towards the end of World War II, where refugees are coming back from Europe into America, and it's these two sisters who have been separated for quite a length of time due to the war and not having access to America. And we begin with the two sisters reuniting and then really trying to re-understand one another and re-get to know one another across this gulf that has happened to them.
And Emily, you play one of these sisters. It's a really interesting structure of the show because sometimes, you know, you have to get used to this in the audience. And I don't want to give anything away, but there's times we're getting reality. There's times we're getting perhaps vision. How much of a challenge is that to you as an actress where you know, you're sometimes you're playing what is currently happening and sometimes you're not. You're playing memory or you're playing fantasy.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, it's a fascinating feature of this play, and it's beautifully written by Barbara, you know, to incorporate Lucia's fantasy and her flashbacks, and so those are all intermixed with reality. And, you know, it was a difficult thing to get the hang of, but once I really gave in to the play and understood how brilliant Barbara's structure is, it comes pretty naturally. Now that we're into the run, so.
And especially when you think about just the post-traumatic stress disorder that has happened and what it means to suffer trauma, the experience of that and the recall of that is very active. It's very in the present moment. And so, it seems is as if you are watching someone that, I mean, Emily does it just so incredibly, where you're watching someone actively trying to deal with the trauma that has emerged out of nowhere.
And so the title itself, Ashana Madel, is Yiddish for the phrase, I think it pretty much translates to pretty girl, right? Fair enough.
Correct.
And,
yeah.
And there's a fair amount of Yiddish. I grew up with a family who you know, so I knew some of that. I was able to translate much of what I was hearing, not a lot, but some much. And but I found that for people in the audience, people connected in different ways. I kind of want to make the point that there were a lot of folks with a Jewish background in the audience, maybe had ties to the war, that kind of thing. They experienced this in a very powerful, meaningful, with lots of tears in a lot of eyes. And yet everybody, regardless of your background, can't help but step into this family and the struggles that they dealt with. Vanessa, as a story that goes beyond its roots to World War II, what is the message of this play today for people who watch this?
Well, sadly, I think this play is becoming more and more relevant every single day, and it's a real shame that we have to be reminded of our history so that we don't make the same mistake, and yet it seems like we are on a path to making the same mistake, very similar mistakes. And so to revisit this play that through the lens of what hate does, what narrow-mindedness does, it is a matter of life and death. And unfortunately, that's not just at this moment trying to remember what that is. It is knowing it on a daily basis, what hate can do.
And Emily, I have to ask you, because you're, you know, Vanessa directed it, but you are the one of these characters. You have this interaction with a sister, and what everybody's gone through, of course, is so traumatic. Does it strike you? Because that's what hit me, is that the ties to life today and the situation in this country and in the world today is very present in this story.
Absolutely. We did a wonderful student matinee this morning for some Chicago Public Schools high school students. And it was really interesting to experience the play with them, in addition to our regular audience. It felt like they brought an interesting new sort of perspective to it, just in hearing what they were responding to. And it was a reminder that, you know, even to high school students, this is familiar in a lot of ways that we would rather it not be. And we experience that in the theater with audiences every day that we do this show.
What I love about Timeline Theater is everything is always based in history. You can learn a lot by just kind of walking out into the lobby area where history is posted, and you can read about this. And actually, for this one, Vanessa, assuming you played a role in some of these setups, there's a map where people are invited to put a pin where their family came from. I imagine that's Timeline's way of saying, we want you all to realize you're part of this story, too.
Exactly. And when we think about our country is made up of a country of immigrants who immigrated to a country that also had already here an indigenous population. And so to remind ourselves of that is really our responsibility, and that we can look through that lens of knowing that our country is made up of immigrants, and to remind ourselves where we came from, I think is a really responsible act in this day and age.
On a positive front, Emily, your character, correct me if I'm wrong, your character seems to go almost through the most change. I mean, in the most traumatic setting at the beginning of this play, but she does work through some things and gets to be more familiar with just the way life has become now, right? Talk about the transition of your character.
I think of it sort of as a thaw, and Vanessa and I spoke about this as we were working on the play, is that, you know, when Lucia arrives in this new and unfamiliar place, she's very much frozen or captured by, you know, the trauma that she's experienced. And throughout the play, in meeting her sister and in renegotiating what family means and what love means and what safety means, she's able to, you know, while healing is probably a much longer process than the process of the play, she's certainly able to awaken or to thaw a little bit from that, you know, that trauma that she enters with. So it is a rewarding journey each night to go from such a place of terror to a place where, you know, love and healing seems more possible.
Well, I just have to say, your role and Bree, who plays your sister, just such amazing interaction that goes on between you and of course, the father, Mordechai Weiss, just to watch the interactions between all of you. I'll be honest, well, I'm not going to ask you this question because at the end, I was a little torn between what might be real and what might not be real, but I think I'll just ponder that in my own mind and let audience members do the same. Ashayna Madel is a show you don't want to miss. It's over at the Timeline Theater on Wellington, 615 West Wellington, right near Broadway. So convenient if you live in the Lakeview area. And you can get tickets at timelinetheater.com. Theater is spelled the proper British way, T-R-E at the end, timelinetheater.com. It's playing through December 2nd, so you have a little time to see it. I believe it's been extended, and that's because audience reaction is amazing. The night I was there, it was a packed house, and such an intimate setting and intimate performances. I congratulate you, Vanessa, on directing this really masterful show, and Emily, what a phenomenal performance. I mean, you, all the actors, but you just really knock us out with your performance, and I want to congratulate you for that.
Thank you.
My thanks to both
of you. Thank
you. Yeah, don't miss Shayna Madel over at Timeline Theater Company. Once again, timelinetheater.com. Thank you guys for being with me. Have a great rest of the run.
Thank you.